From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. With about a month to go before his inauguration, Donald Trump is shaping up his cabinet, making choices that are worrying a lot of Democrats and even a few Republicans. Steve Bannon, who chaired the last few months of Donald Trump's divisive campaign, will be the chief strategist in the White House. Almost as soon as that was announced, people started protesting it.
No KKK, no fascist USA. No Bannon. No KKK, no fascist USA.
That was an anti-Bannon rally of about 500 people outside of LA's City Hall last month. The liberal organization Move On has collected more than a million signatures calling for Bannon to go, and smaller protests have popped up all over the country.
Steve Bannon, I feel, you know, is a man who appeals specifically to extremists. And so just his appointment sends this clear message about fear and hate as, you know, I guess being the accepted narrative for our country and our government.
That's Shay Roman with a Jewish activist group called If Not Now. Much of the criticism of Steve Bannon has focused on Breitbart News, the conservative website he ran before joining Trump's team. Bannon has called Breitbart the platform of the alt-right, which includes white nationalists. Shay says that Bannon and websites like Breitbart are giving hate a platform.
We have to think bigger than just the policies and the laws that might pass or might not, and just think about a larger social narrative that hating is okay and placing blame on other folks is okay. I mean, it's those kinds of ideas that lead to mass genocide.
Here are some Breitbart headlines published on Bannon's watch. Would you rather your child had feminism or cancer? Or this, young Muslims in the West are a ticking time bomb. Conservative commentator Bill Kristol was called a renegade Jew. Beyond the headlines on his website, Bannon himself has made some controversial statements. He told Donald Trump his stance on immigration isn't conservative enough. He called a former female employee a bimbo. And in 2011, he lashed out at feminists while promoting a film praising conservative female politicians like Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann.
In fact, the women that would leave this country would be pro-family. They would have husbands. They would love their children. You know, they wouldn't be a bunch of dykes that came from the Seven Sisters schools up in New England.
We'll hear more of Steve Bannon in his own words coming up. But first, some insight into how he operates. Here's Reveal's Emily Harris.
It's not just what Steve Bannon says that angers people who don't want him advising the president. It's also the beliefs he supports and allows to flourish on platforms he controls. Here's Bannon on his radio show last February with anti-Islam extremist Pamela Geller. They're talking about a speech President Obama had recently given on Islam.
The truth is the only religion attacking, subjugating, and slaughtering members of other religions en masse is Islam. The religion attacking other religions is Islam, and President Obama said nothing of this. Nothing of the gender apartheid, creed apartheid, cultural annihilation.
He's a smart, savvy, tough operator. What was he doing, Pamela Geller?
What he's been doing for the past 7 years. He's been in jihad denial. He was pandering to Muslims.
Some Breitbart employees have defended Bannon as he's faced accusations of racism and misogyny. Here's Joel Pollack, a senior editor and the website's chief legal counsel on CNN.
Not at all. Steve Bannon does not have a bone of prejudice in his body.
Pollack tipped his head as he spoke, and he pointed to the yarmulke he wears as an Orthodox Jew. He noted that Bannon has hired women, Asian Americans, a Brit from a Muslim family to run Breitbart's London office.
And in fact, Steve Bannon went out of his way at Breitbart to look for talent among non-traditional conservatives.
But some ex-employees have been critical. Former Breitbart spokesman Kurt Bardella quit during the presidential primaries. He said the news site he supported had by then turned into a Trump propaganda machine. Bardella told CNN it doesn't matter if Bannon himself is sexist or racist.
Maybe he's not any of those things. Well, the audience that you're catering to certainly are those things. And so you're deliberately playing to that, playing to the worst divisiveness, the most prejudices, the worst racial divides, to either try to get traffic or motivate people to support you. And I think that's despicable.
Ryan Lenz edits the Hate Watch blog at the Southern Poverty Law Center. He can't forget one Breitbart headline.
Hoisting the Confederate flag loud and proud.
Hoisting the Confederate flag loud and proud. This was 2 weeks after a young white man had killed 9 African Americans in a church in South Carolina. Breitbart staff dismiss concerns about headlines like that, saying they're just provocative. But Lentz says it shows that Bannon exploits, creates, and tolerates fear and divisiveness in order to meet strategic goals. And that, he says, reveals who Bannon is.
I don't think that there is evidence to suggest definitively that Steve Bannon is a white supremacist or a closeted fan of the Third Reich. I think there is ample evidence to suggest, to prove, that under Steve Bannon's leadership, Breitbart News became the media arm of alt-right. It's white supremacy rebranded under a different name to make it politically palatable.
Bannon downplays charges of racism in right-wing movements, including in the Tea Party, which he was deeply involved with. At a conference of conservatives at the Vatican 2 years ago, Bannon said there are always fringe groups who join in, but they don't set the agenda. BuzzFeed recently dug up this recording of that speech.
I think when you look at any kind of revolution, you know, you always have kind of and this is a revolution, and you always have kind of people that are, you know, some groups that are disparate. I think that'll all burn away over time, and you'll see more of a mainstream center-right populist movement.
Some new presidents might consider such negative attention of a top advisor a liability. Not this one. After the election, Harvard hosted a forum with top staff from both the Trump and the Clinton campaigns. These postmortems are usually pretty friendly. But this time, things got heated when Clinton staff accused Bannon of divisive and racist tactics. Trump's campaign manager, now senior advisor, Kellyanne Conway, fired back.
The reason Steve Bannon was hired is the reason that he's going to be the chief strategist and special counsel to the president of the United States is because he's a brilliant tactician.
So let's take a look at Steve Bannon's tactics. First, Breitbart. All caps, click me headlines go to articles that sometimes don't substantiate the promised hype. The site mixes commentary with reporting. It focuses persistently on certain themes that match its anti-immigrant, anti-feminist, anti-political establishment agenda. Breitbart casts Black Lives Matter as inciting a race war aimed at destroying America. Whenever Planned Parenthood is mentioned, Breitbart calls the organization simply an abortion chain, sometimes even an abortion chain with Nazi roots, ignoring other services Planned Parenthood provides, like sex education and birth control, to avoid unwanted pregnancies in the first place. Bannon served on Breitbart's board since the private news company was started. He took over operations as executive chair in 2012, after founder Andrew Breitbart died unexpectedly. But that's not all Bannon did that year. He also started a nonprofit to pursue deeper research, working in tandem with the Daily News site. The mission statement of the Government Accountability Institute, known by its initials GAI, is to investigate and expose crony capitalism, misuse of taxpayer monies, and other government corruption and malfeasance. Sounds a lot like drain the swamp. Bloomberg Businessweek reporter Joshua Green visited GAI last year. It's in Tallahassee, Florida.
It looks something like what you get if Scarlett O'Hara were designing an office park. It's these little brick buildings, which are pretty plain, but there's big verandas with swooping fans, and the GAI staff will sit out on the veranda smoking cigars on afternoons and brainstorm about how to kind of go after Hillary or do their thing.
Breitbart and GAI share staff and have other financial ties. But unlike Breitbart, GAI doesn't traffic in quick hits. Researchers take months scraping the internet for credible dirt. Joshua Green calls this two-pronged approach Bannon's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
You know, on the one hand, you had Bannon doing this, you know, very serious, legitimate, stand-up, nonpartisan research through GAI, which I thought of as being his Dr. Jekyll side, you know, and then on the other hand, in his other life, he was the publisher, executive chairman of Breitbart News, which was this loud, obnoxious, crusading, sometimes offensive right-wing news site that I think of as being more like a Mr. Hyde.
The combination means Bannon can deliver the same message but packaged differently for two very different audiences, fans of the right-wing talk show circuit and subscribers of mainstream media. Let's break down one example of how this works. Last year, presidential hopefuls were still testing their chances, and HarperCollins published a book called Clinton Cash. The story laid out connections between foreign businesses and donations to the Clinton Foundation. It was written by GAI's president, Peter Schweitzer, based on information GAI researchers had dug up. It alleged that Clinton abused her position as Secretary of State. An early copy wound up in the hands of several mainstream media outlets, including the Washington Post.
We had been pursuing a lot of storylines involving the Clintons.
The Post's deputy national politics editor, Peter Walston, knew Schweitzer from his previous publications. Schweitzer doesn't only go after Democrats. He wrote a book in 2011 revealing insider stock trading by many members of Congress. That got a law changed. In 2013, Schweitzer accused Republican leader John Boehner of essentially charging companies to get hearings on certain bills. Schweitzer's reputation is part of why the Washington Post paid attention.
If Peter Schweitzer called me up tomorrow and said that he had an amazing story tip for me, I would listen to what he had to say, and then I would decide whether it's worth pursuing, and then we would, if we pursued it, we would report it to the ground and figure out whether it was a story.
In 2015, articles investigating the Clinton Foundation and foreign donations spread throughout the mainstream media. Some cited leads from Schweitzer's research. Then Breitbart came back in the picture. The site posted a list of 11 explosive facts in the Clinton book that it said were verified by the mainstream media. Bloomberg's Joshua Green says this is a perfect example of what Bannon's backers call his brilliance.
He could go over to Breitbart and they could run these rolling narratives saying, look, it's not just us saying that Hillary is nefarious and evil and corrupt. Here's the New York Times saying it over here, and here's a story from the Washington Post, and here's 60 Minutes. And he could both excite the right-wing populist base while at the same time disillusioning Hillary Clinton's core of support.
Whether Steve Bannon is going after Hillary Clinton or Republicans in Congress, his big beef is what he calls crony capitalism, people who profit from their political power. In that Vatican speech 2 years ago, Bannon bragged about Breitbart helping get Republican Majority Leader Eric Cantor knocked out of office by a Tea Party candidate.
The reason that this guy won is quite simple, is that middle-class people and working-class people are tired of people who say they're conservative selling out their interest every day to crony capitalists.
If you peel back the layers, this fury at politicians getting rich is at the core of Bannon's motivation. It may also be his Achilles heel. Democratic Senator Jeff Merkley says Bannon's boss, Donald Trump, campaigned against money influencing Washington. But key cabinet positions so far signal the opposite.
I think many folks thought he really would take on the corporate culture that kind of symbolized by drain the swamp. However, he's not draining the swamp unless he's draining it directly into his cabinet.
Merkley's a Trump opponent, but even some of Trump's core supporters have started to air similar concerns about crony capitalism within the White House. As Trump's chief White House strategist, the question is, how might Steve Bannon respond?
That story was produced by Reveal's Emily Harris. So what does Steve Bannon really believe in? And where do those beliefs come from? Reveal's Amy Julia Harris has been listening through his speeches and talking to people who know him. So Amy, what'd you find out?
Well, the things that make headlines for Steve Bannon are him making disparaging comments about women, and he's told some of his friends that he thinks that some people are genetically superior to others, that only property owners should be able to vote. He's been kind of extreme in a few of these offhand comments that he's made, but the recurring theme throughout his speeches is something that Emily touched on in her story, what he sees as crony capitalism. And that really, really angers him. Breitbart News was built on the rise of the Tea Party, and their whole platform was based on anger on the elites and the existing system that they felt like wasn't working for them. And Steve Bannon got in the trenches with the Tea Party. He was traveling around the country with them, and here he is at a rally in New York City in 2010, really laying out what's on his mind.
In the last 20 years, our financial elites and the political class have taken care of themselves and led our country to the brink of ruin.
Amen!
Do you think crony capitalism is Bannon's number one issue, or is there anything else that's kind of vying for that spot?
So Steve Bannon's really worried about the unmooring of American society, saying that we're losing our Judeo-Christian center. Our values are sort of under attack. And he sees that as going hand in hand with the rise of Islam and the secularization of the West.
Now, that all converges with something that we have to face, and it's a very unpleasant topic. But we are in an outright war against jihadist Islam, Islamic fascism. This war is I think, metastasizing far quicker than governments can handle it.
So here he is speaking to the Vatican in 2014, laying out the threat he sees of radical Islam. He likes these big fights. I talked to one of his friends who said that he sees life as an epic battle between good and evil. That's how he views everything.
So, Amy, where do you think these views came from?
I think there are a few different moments in Steve Bannon's life that really crystallize his political thinking. One of them was his time in the Navy in the late 70s, early 80s. He was serving under President Jimmy Carter. He was on a destroyer and was sailing around the Persian Gulf. And I talked to some of his Navy friends who said that time really made Steve Bannon even more conservative because he saw Jimmy Carter as weak. He didn't like being pushed around by the Soviets and was just kind of embarrassed by America's foreign policy. So Reagan's presidency really resonated with him. Steve Bannon, after he left Goldman Sachs, was making this documentary about Reagan, and it was initially going to be a standard biopic. But then September 11th happened, and that really changed his thinking. Here is his co-producer, Tim Watkins, laying out how Steve Bannon's thinking shifted.
9/11 happened, and it kind of changed our perspective on the whole idea of the film. We found kind of this thread throughout Ronald Reagan's youth and into his public life and how he had a strong disdain for communism. So that kind of changed the whole direction of the film that we were making into what it ultimately became today. And the thesis that we kind of came out of that was life is a battle of good versus evil and history repeats itself.
So this guy is going to be in the White House. He's going to have the president's ear. What should we expect? What kind of advice is he going to be giving Donald Trump?
You know, I think we sort of have to go on what he has said. He's come out strongly against illegal immigration and some immigration. And he said that he's very pro-typical conservative values, family values. He's pro-life. People have said that those are sort of the guiding principles of Steve Bannon, and those are going to be the things that he tells Donald Trump.
Thank you very much. That's Reveal's Amy Julia Harris. And for the record, we requested an interview with Steve Bannon, but his office didn't get back to us. Our team here at Reveal will continue to investigate the incoming Trump administration and will bring you these stories over the coming weeks and months. Coming up, with the holidays just around the corner, a lot of us will be packing our bags and our gifts and heading to an airport to visit family and friends. And for some of us, things won't go according to plan. Like with these folks who tried to save money by flying a budget airline.
Chaos. It was just pure chaos because no one had any clue what was going on, where to go, what to do. There was no signage. And we were like, well, do we just get our bags and sleep in the airport or, you know, what's going on?
A no-frills travel nightmare, next on Reveal, from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.